Good morning. Can you hear me okay? I mean, we're having some issues with the sound system and the heat perhaps, so I turned some things down. Yesterday we were getting feedback of Holly's funeral. There were so many miracle workers in the first century, it was hard to make your mark. It was hard to stand out. And the records we have in the first century, they're just many of those folks wandering about. And it was a time of miracles, magic. And so in Mark's community wrote these stories today, they're trying to make Jesus stand out. But they're much more than magic stories of physical healing. And I don't mean to discount physical healing. It happens. But there is something else taking place here. And so I'd like to do my little Jewish midrash. So I make no claims for literal truth, what I'm about to say. But I want to explore the first healing story. So I want to walk us through that story, flesh it out. There's a lot there. Most of it is unstated. So he gets off a boat. He gets off a boat and he's this itinerant preacher. I don't know, maybe 29, 30 years old. And a crowd begins to gather around him. You know, it's crowds kind of do, they kind of jostle each other and push and shove and try to get close. Maybe he's teaching, maybe he's talking, maybe they're talking with one another. And in the midst of this gathering group of human beings, this Jewish official comes up, Jairus. We have his name, the synagogue, member of the synagogue, Jairus. And he asked Jesus to come to his home because his daughter is very ill. Well, for an itinerant preacher to heal the daughter of a synagogue official, whose name is Jairus, would be big stuff. You're no longer a nameless healer in the crowd. You've healed someone of import, someone of repute. And so we're told Jesus is going to make his way to the house of this Jairus. Well, I don't know if he appears anywhere else in Scripture except in this story of Mark. But this is where things get interesting. He's making his way, and there's this crowd. I don't know, I used to live in Washington, D.C., and I'd see these scrums in rugby. You ever seen a rugby scrum? Everyone kind of gathered around and moving down the field. That's that kind of magic. There they are, they're kind of jostling with each other to get to the middle where the football is, and that's Jesus, right? And they're rubbing against each other, touching each other. They're trying to figure out what's going on. And in the midst of this, this other figure appears. Now, what's fascinating is, at least to me, it may not be to you, a woman appears. She doesn't have a name. Jesus has a name. Jairus has a name. He's even associated with a synagogue. But this woman, I see a lot of women out here. You all have names. She doesn't. Just a woman appears. And I don't know, perhaps she's in, what would a single woman do in this scrum primarily of men? It wouldn't necessarily be a place where a woman would appear. So maybe she appears and she's not recognizable. Maybe she's dressed so you can't tell she's a woman in the crowd. But then it says she's been hemorrhaging, which is a euphemism, that she's been menstruating for 12 years. It's a long menstruation. 12 years of flowing blood. So maybe there's good reason to be covered up, to not be recognizable, to not be even known as a woman in the group. She has purpose, though, doesn't she? 12 years. And she evidently has some will here. She makes her way through this group of humanity. And her focus right now is on Jesus. He's a teacher and maybe a healer, and she wants to make contact. Not only does she want to, she's going to. So she makes her way in and through the sea of humanity, and we're told she touches the hem of his garment, right? And he knows it. Have you ever been in a crowd at a party, and we're being jostled about and bumped about, and then someone touches you and you know it? You know you've been touched. Or it may not even have been a touch. Someone catches your eye in that sea of humanity, and you just know they've been looking at you. It resonates with your soul. There is a connection. There is a meeting. And for that to happen, two things need to be present. Jesus needs to be grounded. He needs to be aware of what's going on. In the midst of this humanity, this is pressing in on and against him. He needs to be aware enough that when someone deliberately, intentionally reaches out to touch him, he notices it. His being resonates with that touch. And she needs to be aware of what she is doing. This is not an incidental touch. It's not an accidental touch. It's a deliberate reaching out of making contact with Jesus. And he knows it. And he asks. Why is it? He's curious. All the sea of humanity pressing in against you, and you notice one person's touch. And who touched me? And the disciples are kind of beside themselves. So, you know, what do you mean, who touched him? I mean, just look around. No, that's just incidental, accidental contact. Who touched me? Who made contact with my heart, with my body, with my soul? Who touched me? You see, I think he's curious. Who, in the midst of that sea of humanity, had the capacity to resonate with him? Just touching his cloth. Who had that strength to make their way through, the deliberateness to make the contact? Who touched me? He wants to know. This has been an amazing meeting here. And she comes forward, and we're told she's afraid. Well, because she's trying to do this all surreptitiously, right? The whole point was to touch and not be noticed. The whole point was to make contact and not be seen. But she comes forward, and he asks about her. So this is really where the midrash begins. The fascination with this story. It says she tells him the whole truth. You gotta be kidding me. I'll sit down with Barb, you're gonna tell me your whole truth the next 5 minutes with everyone watching. The whole truth. This is a conversation that lasts a while. The whole truth. You mean this woman who has tried to make her way in to this scrum of humanity and touch another human being, is now going to have this public conversation about her whole truth with everyone watching. We all just sit down, and Jesus and this woman are going to talk about her whole truth. So what's she going to tell him? What does she... She could tell him lots of stories. And usually that's what we do when we're afraid or anxious. Well, let me tell you this story, Jesus. When I was little, this happened to me. Or let me tell you this story, Jesus, about the synagogue. But I don't sense that's what Jesus is after when he's asking me to be told the whole truth of her. He wants to hear what's happening now. You touched me now. What are you experiencing now? Not a story, but what are you experiencing now? That is a tough move for you and I to make. We love stories. But to have someone ask us, so what are you experiencing now, Kevin? Can you share with me the whole thing? Yeah, I'll tell you, Jesus, I'm scared I'm out of wits because you just revealed me to everyone here and I'm an impure human being. I haven't been to synagogue in 12 years. No one will touch me. No one will be associated with me because if they do, they're impure like me. I am afraid. You ask me how I feel. I'm afraid for my life. I have no reputation. I have no life. I'm in my 20s. I have no husband. I've been bleeding for 20 years, 12 years. You name it. It's been a lot of years. Who wants to be near me? We're not told there are any brothers with her. Where is her father? Will anyone be with this woman in public? My life is a shambles. That's my experience. That's part of my truth. And I'm tired of being bled dry. I'm tired of having my reputation bled dry. I'm tired of not being able to be in synagogue and having my teaching that would come to me, it's just bled dry. I have no future. It's bled dry. And as she talks, you know, she had been so resolute on touching Jesus and seeing Jesus. My sense is, as she talks, all he does is look at her and listen to her. He doesn't give her a theological treatise. He doesn't tell her what her experience means. He's looking back at her. And she's beginning to discover what her story, what her truth is. And the more they talk, and the more she's able to speak, the crowd kind of fades into the background. And all that's left is just her and Jesus in this intimate conversation being witnessed by maybe 100 people. But they no longer matter. She's speaking her truth, the truth of her experience, and it matters to her. Her life matters to her. Her name matters to her. No one else may know it, but she knows her name. She knows what it's like not to be called, what it's like to be avoided and judged. And she shares the experience with Jesus, and he listens, and he appreciates, and he's curious, and he values her. He values her. And my sense is, this woman, this amazing, strong woman, this resolute woman, begins to value herself. She is inherently valuable. And her healing begins. Her salvation begins. It's rather remarkable, isn't it? Jesus doesn't say, your belief in me has saved you. You have seen the light, sister. I am the one. He doesn't say, You know, the members of your synagogue, your community, they've been right all along. He doesn't give her any of that. He just says, your faith. What does the word faith in this context mean? It means she's attended to her own experience. She trusts her own experience. She trusts her life. It's valuable. Jesus valued it. That's her healing. That's her, the beginning, really, of her salvation. It would be tremendous if a hemorrhaging of 12 years stopped. It would be miraculous if the hemorrhaging of her life stopped. It would be an amazing beginning of a new life if the bleeding forth of her value, of her dreams, of her hopes, of her passions, if that bleeding stopped. We love our bodies. I mean, my God. But they fade. But our value does not. When that bleeds dry, we're like dust. But when we attend to and when we value the inherent beauty and goodness and worth that we are, and another recognizes it. Now that's an astounding miracle. And the courage to explore when other people are watching and then they don't even matter anymore. She matters, regardless of what the synagogue thinks or brothers think or family thinks. Our road to healing begins with attending to our own experiences. They are valuable. They are full of revelation about who we are. And that's what matters to Christ. For each of us to discover that and attend to that, and to have other members of our community who listen to each other, not for a story, but to our experience. Not to judge us, not to put us in a box of belief or not belief, but simply to listen to our experience. And I believe probably at the end of the story, although it's not included in Mark's version, Jesus knew her name. And her name, like his, was Christ, an anointed one. Amen.